Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, joining me now for an Arsecast special, as there won't be an Arsecast this weekend, in the wake of the Chelsea game, to have a little chat about the state of play at the club at the moment, our good player.
Hi there.
Gilberto Silva from Gunnerblog.
Hello.
And the man from East Lower.
Good evening.
If I can start with you, man from East Lower, a season which started tremendously positively has now taken on a really... negative. You can see how negative things have gotten in the wake of the last two games against Sunderland and against Chelsea, and particularly the game against Chelsea. I think people have been not surprised by how much better they were than us, but I think a little bit shocked that we didn't put up more of a fight.
Yeah, I think so. I think standing there in the teeming rain yesterday was... it was quite sobering how much, especially in this, you know, sort of in the second half, we just sort of were going up against a brick wall. Basically, it was really lopsided at that point. I think I've slightly mellowed as the day's gone on, and you know, I understand a bit more that the circumstances, sort of the goal coming, the first goals coming when they did, you know, conspired against us a bit. But that still doesn't take away the fact that we were really second best, painfully second best yesterday.
Gilberto Silva, defensively, this team had issues last season. The illusion that they've been fixed this season was maybe clouded a bit, as I said in my blog, that, you know, Gallison Vermaelen formed a great partnership, but it was more of a goal-scoring partnership than a defensive one.
Yeah, it was. And the other thing is that Vermaelen's obviously a very accomplished footballer, a very good player on the ball, good in the tackle, strong in the air. The problems are deeper than just the individuals. You know, all those defenders are international class defenders. It's more about the team and the system. I think that's more where our defensive problems lie.
Good player. The headline, which I have to pick up again, the embarrassment of Titches, and I know it was one of your readers or somebody on Twitter that gave you that. Did that have a part to play in the goals that we conceded against Chelsea?
I don't know if it had a part to play in the goals we conceded. I think Didier Drogba's a handful at the best of times. I think he's playing very, very well, and I think he's got one of those things where Arsenal's a club that he just thrives against, a bit like Adebayor used to thrive against Tottenham, and I don't think that made Jonathan Woodgate and Ledley King bad defenders. I think the Titches issue is slightly further up the pitch, if you like. I think if you look at them, there's a slight sameness, and I think, you know, that one is kind of similar to the other, to the other, to the other. I thought it was a shame we didn't play Walcott, really. I know he was pretty wretched when he came on, but I think he might at least have pinned Ashley Cole back early on, offered us some pace, which we really, if you're not going to have height, you know, you at least have pace. And we were kind of just all very technical. And I think that's where the Titches come into it, more than the defence. You know, on the defence, I think we the first 10 games or 12 games or whatever it was, you know, we were scoring so many goals that conceding a few was always going to be a consequence of that. And I think also that individual goalkeeping errors could explain a few of them. I just don't think Gallison and Vermaelen were actually so bad. I think they got given the runaround by Drogba yesterday, and yeah, these things happen in people's careers.
It is a team thing, though, isn't it, defending? Because you can talk about defending from the front and people think it's a cliche, but if you stop the supply, as we spoke about maybe before the Chelsea game, stop the supply to Drogba and you go a long way to stopping the goals. We weren't able to do that yesterday, and some of the defending and some of the responsibilities that lay further up the pitch defensively weren't taken care of.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. If you watch Chelsea's first goal, You know, Chelsea got two fullbacks, one of whom is very good going forward, actually, kind of. The other one offers nothing, really, and that's Branislav Ivanovic. So you can really concentrate, you can afford to sort of really deploy someone on that right-hand side to watch. Carl, Man United did it with Antonio Valencia quite successfully. If you watch the first goal again, when John Terry slides that ball through to Ashley Cole, Andrea Shervin completely leaves his man. Like, he lets Cole run in behind him, and he is not a defensive player, but it's just the simple thing of tracking your man, and it's basic errors like that. You know, this is a side that's geared to attack and geared to go forward, but that doesn't mean that defensive responsibility is not important.
I thought there was one really interesting moment quite early on in the first half, where I think it was Michael Essien who got it in the Chelsea midfield, not that far from his goal. And I think it was Song who suddenly snapped in on him. And spurred by that, someone else then snapped in on the next Chelsea player who Essien gave it to him. Before you knew it, we had a corner. And it was really good. But unfortunately, that was almost the only time that happened. And that was disappointing for me. I thought we were very timid in the tackle. And I think if you look at it, Cesc Fabregas got booked in the last seconds. And before that, Armando Traore got booked for a kind of one-off foul when the guy got away from him. But we weren't even getting those kind of yellow cards in the midfield that you'd almost like to see your players get in a fixture like this. So that was really disappointing for me.
How have we gone, Man from East Lower, from being a team which was not only a team that could play fantastic football because we had pace and we had skill, and you can find those attributes in the Arsenal team of today. You know, you've got creative players and all that. But we had real physical presence. We intimidated teams before we went on the pitch with the likes of Vieira, Saul Campbell, Martin Keown, even Thierry Henry is 6'2", Robert Pires was over 6', and they were a team that liked, Gilberto Silva in there as well, they were a team that liked to mix it up, and we all remember the red card, Arsenal shame. Every time he got a red card, it was another one to add to Arsene Wenger's terrible record since he arrived in England. How have we gone from almost, not one extreme, but we've gone so far the other way? How can we hope to compete?
Well, we have gone the other way, and I think if you look at the 2004 team, all of us who sat there in 2004 pinched ourselves thinking, yeah, this is never going to happen again. This is awesome. And it was an awesome side. I mean, if you look at the lineup, it was awesome. And we've lost a bit of the experience, a lot of the experience there. We've lost some of the physical presence. And so I don't know why. I don't know why Wenger's opted for the littler players, but he can answer that. We've got a few big players, but they're all the ones who are tall just weren't playing yesterday, and that's not really the fault of anyone other than the fact that they got injured. But the other thing I wanted to pick up on, which is quite interesting, is that Wenger said it took us too long to the Sunderland game affected us and longer than it ought to have done, and I find that really interesting. And you could tell yesterday that the heads went down a little bit. And I wonder why it takes us so long to recover from a blip. You know, it's a sign of a good team that you can bounce right back. Sunderland away shouldn't have had that kind of effect on us.
I kind of agree with that. Any other thoughts? Because we do tend to take setbacks, we tend to really react very badly to them. You know, that it takes us a while to get going again.
Exactly. That's why we're having this conversation, really, isn't it? It's not what's happened. We've lost two games. That happens to teams, and it's a shame. But two games ago, before the Sunderland game, we were people's tips for the title. We've only lost two games. It's not what's happened. It's what we fear is going to happen, which I think is why we're all sitting here kind of shitting ourselves, for want of a better term. We fear that we're going to go on a really bad run, because that's what tends to happen, and we tend to react in these defeats in the worst possible way. What I'd really like to see is us to beat Stoke. All right, Stoke are in good form. They've been doing well, but we're at home to them. We should be hoping to beat them. If we beat Stoke, then suddenly Chelsea at Man City, and if they beat Man City, be the first team to beat them at the Eastlands this season, fair enough. If they don't, then suddenly that gap is ostensibly down to 5 or 6 points, basically, if we can beat Bolton at home in our extra game. And, this is a thing. We've got to get out of this rut that we always seem to get into. And that, I think, is what everyone fears, more than the fact that, we've lost two games.
Gilberto Silva, this time last year, we put the stats up and they're not that much different. Only at the end of November last year, we played two more games. We've got our game in hand, as we know, and I think the interlull this season, the number of them has given us another two games to put ourselves in a better position. After we lost to Manchester City on November 22nd last year, we then went on a run where we didn't lose again in the league until the 10th of May. So while we talk about having bad spells and this mythical November, which isn't so mythical anymore, we are capable of going on a long unbeaten run, which is exactly what we need to do right now.
It is what we need to do. I mean, I think that, you know, in that run, I think you've alluded to this on the blog, there was a lot of sort of quite poor draws, you know, which games that we should have won and didn't. And it was quite a frustrating time, sort of until February really came around. January and December were pretty dark months. Everyone was desperate for new signings, to go as far as I remember, and eventually what one did, and it sort of picked up. What's really interesting to me comparatively to last season is we've lost a similar amount of games, but last season we seemed to do well in the big games against the big teams in the first half of the season and lose to sides nearer the bottom of the table. This season we're comfortably beating most of those teams, but the decent sides that we've come up against, we lost to Manchester United, we lost to Manchester City, we lost to Chelsea, we lost to Sunderland, who are doing okay. With the exception of Spurs, the derby game, we've really sort of struggled in the big games, and that's actually something quite new for this Arsenal side. I think for the past couple of years, we've always done well with our immediate rivals, but struggled against the lesser teams. And I just think it's a really interesting and quite hard to explain predicament.
Any thoughts on that? Go on, sorry. Go on.
Well, I was going to say two very quick points on that, is that I think actually in 2007, 2008, when we did do quite well, we didn't actually do that well against the big teams. In fact, we did worse than we'd done the season before, which was, by all accounts, a pretty terrible year, the first one at the Emirates. And the other thing I'd say is that Man U last season, their record against the top four was actually pretty woeful. So it's funny, because there's always an argument to fit on it. You know, it's kind of, you say, oh, we're crap against the big four, or you say, oh, we're crap against the small teams. And I mean, I don't have the answers. I don't quite know how it works. Maybe some of it's just down to kind of chance and how things pan out, but it confuses me.
The situation, let's say, with the defence, and particularly I want to highlight the goalkeeping situation, because if you look at a team and you start from the back and goalkeeper is your first line of defence or last line of defence, however way you're going up the pitch, is this an Arsenal team that would benefit a great deal from a goalkeeper who instills the kind of confidence and calmness in a defence that, you know, previous incumbents have had? And for me, Slower?
I think if we could get a 1991-era David Steeman, we would. But I don't actually think there are that many fabulous keepers available out there at the moment. I don't know. I don't think... I've got my niggling doubts about Almunia, and I have had sort of on and off for a few years. He'll do well for a while, and I'll forget about it, and then suddenly a few things come along and you worry again. I would say, if I was being realistic here, if Fenger's going to make some signings in January, he's not going to make five. So where's more important that the cover go, or that might get spent on, you know, is it more important that we get another centre-back in or another striker in? And you could argue that it probably is. I think, having said that, I think will Almunia be here sort of next? Well, that I don't know. But yeah, he's going through one of his stages, I think, isn't he?
Mm. Any other thoughts on the keeping situation?
Have you guys seen that stat that's going around today? I can't quote it exactly, but it's about the percentage of shots on target that have been goaled against this season.
Yeah.
And it's something ludicrous, 40% or something. 40% of shots on targets have been goals against us. And you know, obviously, you know, stats, they don't mean everything. But that is a really worrying figure. And I think Almunia's form this season has been a long way off what it has been in the past couple of years. I've always been one of his staunchest supporters, but something's clearly not right. And I think the way in which he was left out of the team earlier in the season only brought back like a real injury crisis. It suggests that his long-term future at the club is like the Mavericks does in serious doubt.
What do we make of the injury situation? We're without Robin Van Persie now till probably April. He is undoubtedly a really, really talented footballer, capable of scoring and creating goals, but has never, since the time he arrived at Arsenal Football Club, gone through a season, it seems, without a serious or relatively serious injury. So for all that talent and all that ability, are we wise to rely on him as our main striker? And I think his injuries are more unlucky rather than being a sort of an injury-prone guy who does his hamstring, you know, every few months like Michael Owen or Ryan Giggs used to do. He is a bit unlucky in that regard. But can we keep relying on him when it leaves us in a situation like we're in at the moment?
I think that's, the funny thing is that, you know, I don't think he was carrying us. You know, it's a really easy argument to say that, oh, it was all to do with Van Persie that we were doing so well beforehand, blah, blah, blah. You know, at the beginning of the season, everyone was strutting around saying, oh, Van Persie, you can't believe he's not that kind of player. And, of course, he could. But the interesting thing was that they were still saying that in the first, you know, three or four games, and we were knocking six past Everton and four past Portsmouth and four past Wigan, etc., and the forwards weren't scoring. I think we've been unlucky to Van Persie and Bentner out at the same time. And I think Eduardo is go through a difficult patch, not helped by those cretins at UEFA, and you know.
Do you really think the UEFA? I know you said that on your, but do you really think that's had a big impact on his game and on his form?
I don't know. But the more I look, the more I think about it, the more absurd I realise it is. What happened? I mean, just such a bizarre kind of judicial process, completely out of keeping with any kind of.
I think it was really absurd, but like. Sorry to interrupt, but with like some players, they would respond to that. You know, if you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
God loathe him, but Cristiano Ronaldo was a hate figure for things like diving and his other back in this country. But he took it, you know, on his massive, enormous chin and sort of went on and sort of established himself and kept performing. And I sort of haven't really got time for Eduardo to sort of be sad about the fact that someone said he dived. If he didn't do it, he didn't do it. So it's like, just get on with it and play. Do you know what I mean?
No, I know, but I think if you go, I just think, you know, if you go onto YouTube, there's diving Eduardo, and you know, there's videos of him kind of just walking to his car at some away ground or something and getting bombarded with abuse from, you know, some fans of some, I can't remember which club it was someone Northern who we've played this season or something. And you know, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it. I look at it and, you know, I don't think he's so he just went from to being public enemy number one, basically. And being all over radio, TV, and of course you've got to be mentally strong. I'm not saying that is the reason. It may just be that he's not quite fit, or it may just be that, you know, hell, he's going through a bit of bad form. I just look at that and it makes me angry, because I think, you know, it was bizarre persecution, but it may be nothing to do with his current, you know, struggles.
Wouldn't it be ironic if he bounced back from having his leg practically severed? But the thing that really scuppered him was that he wasn't confident anymore. I'm not so sure that it's that. I just think he could be just struggling a bit for fitness I don't know. I mean, it would be a bit odd, wouldn't it, if that was the thing that sort of sank him.
Mm. I
just think he's on a bit of. I think he's just going through a patch. It happens, you know.
Hmm.
It was interesting though watching him on Sunday. Like, there were three occasions, or it might have been three, where he sort of, the ball came towards him in the box, and Eduardo, certainly pre-injury, and, you know, probably in those first few games when he came back and played intermittently, would have had one touch out of his feet and got a shot away, and it just wasn't happening for him at all. It wasn't happening, and you could see on the touchline Arsene Wenger was getting really frustrated. And eventually came off after an hour, which is early for an Arsene Wenger substitution. No matter who you are, that's very early.
Hmm. What about Arshavin? The guy is capable of something out of nothing, but we're getting a lot of nothing at the moment. I thought the quotes, you know, regarding the World Cup exit were really worrying from an Arsenal point of view, because you know, I don't give a shit about Russia. What I give a shit about is him performing for the club, and I can understand him being upset, and I can understand him being you know, a little bit down at the fact that his country hasn't qualified for the World Cup. But, you know, talk about how nobody can revive me, and I don't, you know, are they just a bit too precious?
He talks a lot, doesn't he, Arshavin? And I never quite know how much of it is actually coming from him, or how much of it's sort of attributed to him, because you do read a lot of that stuff about him. I don't know. He's weird. I'm not sure I believe that he's that affected by that. I'm not sure, because, I mean, this is the player who, you know, on one of his first games, got 8 stitches in his foot and just carried on. And Ditto the other day, he had 5 stitches in his head and just carried on. So I don't know, really. I mean, I think, it would be a bit of a weird one if he sort of sailed through physical injuries, but couldn't quite muster the courage to play after his team went out of the World Cup.
Mm.
I think I agree. I mean, he's a tough cookie. I think a lot of those quotes could be down to the fact that at the end of the day, he is the captain of a massive nation with a huge trajectory that they would qualify. And he's got to come out and say, and sort of, you know, justify. He can't go, well, I'm not bothered. Do you know what I mean? There's a degree to which I'm sure it's an appeasement statement, say, look, we really cared, we really tried for the country or whatever. Yeah. I think that his role as international captain sort of... But then, you know, on the other side of the coin, you've got Arsene Wenger saying, yeah, he's down, I couldn't play him at Sunderland. So there must be an element of truth to it.
Let me talk about January, because I think maybe more than any other transfer window, and we know how crazy they get, transfer windows, and the expectation that fans have. Ivan Gazidis was quoted as saying during the week that success that is built is far more enjoyable. It's worth more than success that is bought. Obviously, a little bit of a dig at Chelsea. The fact is, though, that, you know, Chelsea's bought success is a lot better than our built no success. So, given the issues that we have in this team, we can speak about goalkeeper. We can speak maybe about striker. We can speak maybe as well about centre half, because beyond Gallus and Vermaelen, I don't think anybody's convinced by the options. Sylvester played against Liège after Gallus went off that time, and it was scary. I thought Senderos is so far out of the picture that you know, it's untrue. He's not even getting on the bench these days. So an injury to Gallus and Vermaelen, and we're playing players that Arsene Wenger doesn't even want to play. So, not to salvage our season, but to give ourselves the best chance of winning something this time around, do we not have to go out in January and spend some money? And we know that there's money there.
I'll go in just quickly here. I think, well, firstly, I think, like a good player said, as he said the same, a lot can change between now and in a week, two weeks. And who knows, you know, what our form might be come the end of December. We could be flying again, and we might all be thinking, well, it was a blip, we got over fast, and as it happens, we're doing okay. But at the same time, you saw the effect that Arshavin signing had on us. It really packed us up last year. So I would be absolutely amazed if we didn't dip our into the pockets, into the checkbook this January. I really would.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he will go for something. I think you're quite right about the centre back issue. I mean, it's, you know, if one of those two get injured, it's a disaster, frankly. Because whether or not Senderos is good, the fact that he's so far out of the picture. Jorru is obviously completely out of the picture for ages. As you say, I mean, I wouldn't say Sylvester was scary. I'd say it was a nightmare. I mean, it was just, it's no disrespect to him, but blimey. That really has to be addressed. And I think we probably need to look at replacing Song. Just as a side note, going back to yesterday, I find it astonishing that he took off Alex Song. I think Alex Song has got so much confidence at the moment. He thinks he can do anything, Alex Song, and he probably can the way he's been playing. You know, and with all due respect to Danielson, Song's probably even better going forward at the moment than Danielson is. I'm not saying Danielson's terrible, but Song's just been excellent. And you don't take off your best player. And in a way, when you're going for the game, the one thing you do want is one actual holding player to sit in there who won't commit forward. Mm. I found that quite an extraordinary call to take Song off at half time, but that was just me.
He does love Danielson, though, doesn't he, Gilberto Silva? Arsene Wenger, I mean, not you.
Yeah, he does. But I was amazed by that decision as well, because not only is Song superior defensively, stronger in the tackle, he added some much needed physicality to that midfield, he's actually now showing that, you know, he can pass the ball, he can pick a pass, he's looking a more creative player than Danielson, who, yeah. Danielson works very hard, and he's in a three, he's a good body, because, you know, he gets stuck in. I understand exactly why he was picked in the starting lineup, but why he was retained alongside Fabregas in a partnership that we know doesn't really work, doesn't really function, I have absolutely no idea. And Song is going to be a massive loss, not only in defensive midfield, but because in many respects he would be my first choice cover at centre-back, because I prefer him to, you know, Sylvester or Senderos probably. Senderos, I think, is not even worth us talking about. I don't think that, unless there's a big injury crisis, he's even going to get a look in. I think, for all intents and purposes, his career with Arsenal is essentially over. Mm. So I would love to see a defender come in. I'd love to see a goalkeeper come in, to be honest. But I think it would be unlikely to happen in January. I think a centre back might come in, and a striker maybe. But there's been a lot of, you know, there's a lot of faith and a lot of investment of time in people like Nicholas Bentner and Carlos Vela. And it might be a little bit against Arsene's principles to go and then, you know, pay out big money for a forward.
Mm. Well, we can talk about principles, you know, not getting your results, but Vela is a guy that, you know, has got to start producing. Bentner, when he comes back, can fit into that. Central role. But when we look ahead, let's not sort of dwell on what's really wrong and all that. When we look ahead to December, the fixtures that we've got, you know, in the league, Stoke, Liverpool then is going to be the trickiest fixture, I suppose. Then you've got Burnley, you've got Hull City, you've got Aston Villa, you've got Portsmouth. You know, if you can get the right results, if you can come through December unbeaten with, you know, four wins out of those, you know, six league games under your belt, then you're really, you know, back on track. And I think we're capable of doing that.
Quite right. And I think, you know, we mustn't talk ourselves into despair. And, you know, that goes for the team, the fans and everyone. I know that we do tend to go on bad runs, but, you know, we're ostensibly 3 points behind United if we win our game in hand. It's not the end of the world. And if you only need to look at how Tottenham have responded to the pasting they took at the Emirates 4 weeks ago. And if you actually look at that game, it was remarkably similar. Obviously, they were the away team, but, you know, the kind of decent start, didn't do enough. Two goals just before the break from sloppy defending. Chance after the break, didn't take it. 3-0, you know, looked hopeless, missing the main strike as well. But you only need to look how Tottenham have done that. And they've come back, and they're having a great season. You know, whatever you think of Harry Redknapp, you can't say they're not. And, you know, we can come back and, you know, we just have to show that we can do it. And we just get so depressed as fans and teams, you know, the team, the club, when we lose two games. I can see why, because we do go on bad runs, but it's infuriating.
Sorry, I just a bit of perspective maybe is no bad thing. I don't want to sound unambitious, but going into this season, there was a lot of talk from fans of other clubs, but Arsenal fans as well, about this being a team that, based on the evidence of last season and the lack of investment, was not capable, you know, the top four finish. People were looking at Man City, people were saying Liverpool were going to be title challengers, and, you know, it was there weren't that high hopes. Now, people are going, oh, well, they're going to come third. You know, I mean, like, there was a time when people thought that wasn't possible. Mm. And I think that, you know, to be in with a shot, albeit a long one now, you know, it's something that we ought to feel slightly more positive about.
Man from East Lower, final thoughts?
I mean, my final thoughts are that, yeah, it was a very disheartening loss, which is why we're all a bit gloomy still. But ultimately, I still think this side's improved. There's a definite different feeling to it. I mean, maybe Sunderland and Chelsea notwithstanding, but we've the whole of the Arsenal crowd, all Arsenal fans, felt a lot more positive about us this year, and with good reason. I think the trick is how quickly we can now just brush this, you know, the last two games under the carpet and just get on with it, because I think we have made progress, and I think it's easy to forget that, however disheartening it might have been.
All right, final thing. We've got the Carling Cup on Wednesday night. Tomorrow night, we're going to put out kids the same way we're going to put out kids against Olympiacos, which is fair enough. Manchester City, on the back of seven consecutive draws in the league, he needs a win, so he's going to put out his big team, isn't he? How much of a test is that going to be? Because we've seen the young boys come through and they've played with no fear, but, you know, this is a very expensively assembled Manchester City team, and they have to start winning games sometime.
It's a massive test. You know, the seniors team, the first team, lost 4-1 at Eastlands this season, but that was a different Manchester City. That was a Manchester City that was flying high on the confidence of all these stars coming in and had picked up some good results to start the season. They're in a bit of a rut. They've drawn, is it seven games, like you say, in a row. And I think the hope, I think, for this Carling Cup team comes from the fact there's going to be massive pressure on City to get a result tomorrow. They are the huge favourites when you look at what the probable lineups will be, and their fans will be desperate for a win of any sort so they can start to turn the corner in the league and get back on a winning track. So if things don't go well, if they don't take an early lead, we do have players with the ability to go out there and express themselves, and, you know, you never know. I have to say, I'm not hugely confident, but there's definitely an outside shot.
I think he'll take Theo Walcott there.
He's going to play him.
I think he'll, yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's been one of his press conferences. I presume it's Tuesday. So obviously at the moment we don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me if he took Walcott.
It wouldn't surprise me
if he just tried to give it a little bit of a, just did what he could to make it not too inexperienced, if you like.
Could he play Rzyski maybe?
Could, yeah, possibly, quite possible as well.
Well, he's got to play Walcott as well, though, doesn't he? Because, you know, Theo's played, I don't know what, 90 minutes or 100 minutes of football so far this season. And, you know, you do get the feeling that he's a guy that needs a run of games to feel confident about himself and to feel confident when he's got the ball, you know.
Eboué.
Well, yeah, Eboué could play too. But, you know, Theo, if he's going to play a part in our season, you know, and obviously he's viewed as a first-team player, you know, he's got to start giving him some minutes.
Can't keep him in cotton wool forever. He's got to unleash him, and then the more experience, more games under his belt, the better. Let's just hope that, you know, he's injury-free. But I'd love to see him on Wednesday. I think it would be superb to have him in the side of the real boost.
All right, gentlemen, we better leave it there. Thank you very much, Gilberto Silva from Gunnerblog.
Cheers.
Good player from goodplayer.com.
Cheers.
And the man from eastlower.co.uk. Thank you.
No problem. Cheers.
My thank you to the three gentlemen for their time, for that little bit of a chat, just to talk about what's going on and are things as bad as we think they are. They're probably not as bad as we think they are. Not as good as we would hope, but not as bad as we think they are. This special Arsecast is brought to you midweek because there is no Arsecast this weekend because I'm not going to be here. I'll give you more details on the blog during the week. I know those of you who entered the competition for the Savile Rogue scarf will be dying to know who won, but you'll find that out on the next Arsecast, the next proper Arsecast, which will be on Friday week. So until next time, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.